system. Once the audio is captured and stored in compressed format, the microcomputer chip in the system dials a pre-programmed number and burst transmits the stored information to a receiver. The bug automatically recharges itself when the user charges his cell phone battery. In the 1980s, cell phones communicated using analog signals that were easily intercepted and monitored. In the 1990s, digital cellular providers began offering limited protection from amateur eavesdroppers, but fell far short of the capabilities and technical resources of intelligence services and law enforcement agencies. A bugged olive in a martini glass served at a black tie embassy reception might play well to movie and television audiences, but such things are usually unrealistic for CIA operations. To get the good stuff, surveillance techs installed listening systems in walls and ceilings of consulates, concealed recorders in attaché cases, and hid microphones and transmitters in apartments. They operated contact microphones to eavesdrop through the walls of hotel rooms, rigged telephones, intercepted cell calls, and bounced laser beams off window panes. Whether the techs left cigarette lighters with transmitters in target offices or wired microphones into a case officer's brassiere, the objective never changed: to get secret intelligence in support of national security. For each surveillance operation, the tech selected components that worked together in order to capture the audio at the target site and transmit it to the listening post. Their equipment differed markedly from the repackaged consumer-grade products masquerading as covert electronics and offered for sale at retail spy shops. Consumer electronics normally lack the technical sophistication and reliability needed to operate in security environments where covertness is critical and climatic conditions uncontrolled and unpredictable. Compared to professional spy equipment, the consumer spy gadgets require excessive power, operate erratically, and emit signals that are easy to detect and intercept. Many OTS spy electronics were the result of a collaborative development process between CIA engineers and private companies, where a dedicated team of cleared contractors worked on agency projects. This model of industry-government cooperation produced components with performances that eclipsed commercial standards by decades. Among the most significant examples were rugged, sensitive audio microphones that were later made public and introduced into hearing aids, and small, long-life transmitter batteries that eventually powered heart pacemakers. Charge-coupled devices, CCDs, were used in OTS spy cameras a decade before the same technology was commercially available in digital cameras. The latest and most sophisticated OTS audio equipment was usually reserved for targets in denied areas where hostile technical surveillance countermeasure sweep teams were the most formidable. OTS created a variety of components and eavesdropping devices, each with different characteristics and capabilities that allowed the tech to customize each system to meet the operational requirements and counter the threat. Commercial microphones were developed in the latter quarter of the 19th century after Emil Berliner sold his microphone patent to the fledgling Bell Telephone Company. The world's first electronic eavesdropping system, the Turner Dictograph, introduced in 1915, contained a carbon microphone, battery, and earphone. Buyers were cautioned not to use the device for illegal or immoral purposes. Whether a microphone is located inside the mouthpiece of a telephone or embedded in the wooden leg of a table, its purpose is the same: to convert the sounds of room noise and voices into an electrical signal. From the variety of microphones available, the techs matched the one with the most desirable characteristics to the operational requirement. Mics could be hardwired to the listening post, connected to a concealed recorder worn beneath the user's clothing, or connected to a radio frequency transmitter. While a hardwired mic offered security advantages, the radio frequency transmitter quickly became the most commonly used audio system because the listening post could be placed in remote locations. Contact microphones are effective in capturing sound waves from room audio that cause every hard surface in the room, including the walls, floors, and objects, to vibrate. A sensitive contact microphone with the capability to convert vibrations into an electric signal was especially useful in operations against targets in hotel rooms where the tech had physical access to one of the adjacent rooms or the room above or below. The tech could affix the contact microphone to the wall or floor using glue or a nail to pick up the vibrations. A special type of contact microphone, the accelerometer, could detect vibrations of room conversation or movement through solid concrete walls up to 18 inches thick. For opportunities that required quick reaction, OTS produced a special self-contained motel kit disguised inside a small toiletries case that consisted of a contact microphone, wall adhesive, pocket amplifier with optional output to a tape recorder, and earpiece. It could be packed in a briefcase or carried beneath a coat. The vibroacoustic microphone, designed to be affixed to a reinforcing steel rod or bar inside a concrete column during building construction, could later be connected to concealed wiring that would run to a listening post. Conversations caused the concrete and rebar to vibrate and enabled the vibroacoustic sensor to capture the sounds. Multiple sensors inside the same column on different pieces of rebar could be selectively tuned by the monitor at the post to target specific conversations anywhere in a 360-degree circle around the column. However, the task of attaching the vibroacoustic mics onto the rebar required bribing or distracting security guards at the construction site. Pinhole mics, half the size of a pencil eraser, were a workhorse for the OTS audio techs. Whether mics were hidden behind a floorboard, inside a wall, or embedded in the base of a flower pot, they required only a tiny, less than half a millimeter, airway to capture all of the room noises. The pinhole mic could be installed inside numerous objects or architectural features of a room. When denied access to the target room, the tech could install the mic in a common wall by drilling a pinhole too small to be noticed through the wall, floor, or ceiling. Advances in the 1980s made it possible for OTS to design a fiber-optical microphone that operated using only light waves transmitted to it along a cable thinner than a human hair. The fiber-optical microphone defied detection by a metal detector or nonlinear junction detector, and its tiny wire was easily hidden. Directional mics were designed for operations to pick up a selected conversation from individuals standing together and talking at a social event while excluding other room noise to either side. The rifle mic, a type of directional microphone, was used in outdoor seating or smoking areas to collect conversations from a distance. The increase in smoke-free buildings turned these gathering spots into ideal target areas to collect gossip and personal information. The directional rifle mic, composed of an array of tubes of varying pre-calculated lengths placed in front of the sensitive microphone, filtered out extraneous sounds and reduced all noises other than those from voices in the direction of the target. Audio played a critical role in the rescue of 71 people held hostage for 4 months by the Tupac Amaru Revolutionary Movement, MRTA, in April 1997. 15 armed MRTA terrorists stormed the Japanese ambassador's residence in Lima, Peru, during a diplomatic Christmas party on December 17, 1996, taking 72 Peruvian and foreign hostages. Several days later, when it became apparent that the hostages would be held indefinitely, the Peruvian government began infiltrating listening devices into the residence in hope of acquiring intelligence about the terrorists' intentions and the status of the hostages' well-being. Loudspeakers set up at the front of the residence to deliver messages and harass the terrorists were part of the government's attempt to pressure a surrender. In January, one hostage, a senior Peruvian government official, suddenly assumed the persona of an isolated eccentric. He began talking incoherently and at random to various inanimate objects in ways that suggested his mental state had deteriorated. The act was a ruse. The official had knowledge of audio operations from his previous work and made a calculated guess that something in the residence could contain a bug. In fact, a religious icon did conceal a transmitter, and on one afternoon the listening post monitors heard the hostage pray, "If you hear this, play La Cucaracha tomorrow." Precisely at 6 a.m. the next morning, La Cucaracha blared through the loudspeakers, baffling the Lima press as to why the government would use a famous Spanish Civil War song as a harassment tool. After the musical acknowledgement, the eccentric continued talking to the icon for 3 months until April 22nd, when, minutes before the successful rescue assault, he reported that the hostages were in a relatively safe indoor area while the terrorists were in an open area playing their usual afternoon soccer match. The assault was launched, killing the 15 MRTA revolutionaries and rescuing all but one hostage. OTS audio techs left nothing to chance in preparation and advance planning for their operations. The complexity and the risk of the activity demanded that each phase of any technical surveillance operation be considered and documented. CIA headquarters required that a survey and written proposal, known as the 52-6, be prepared, submitted, and approved before an audio operation could proceed. The survey consisted of 6 primary elements. The target could be a person or a facility such as a telephone line, building, room, or automobile. Methods used to operate against a target varied by the type of information sought. If the target was a briefing by a senior military attaché during his weekly staff meeting, the embassy conference room would be the place to plant the listening device. On the other hand, if the attaché was being assessed for possible recruitment, his bedroom or the telephone line he used for personal calls might be locations where his conversations would reveal an exploitable weakness. Attacking the third-floor room of a trade mission with windows overlooking a busy street would require a completely different operational plan than one to bug the general's briefing room inside a secure military base. Without a means of gaining unobserved access to the target facility, there could be no operation. Audio operations required a thorough physical description of the site, including a viable location for a listening post. A signal path loss test identified any physical obstructions that would degrade the bug's transmission signal. Activity patterns of occupants were recorded. Any security and alarm systems, including the use of guard dogs, was plotted. The survey estimated the operational life of the battery in the listening device, identified the number of people, their special skills, and the type of equipment required. The techs projected the time they could be safely inside the target, the optimum date and time for the operation, a proposed escape route, individual cover requirements, and the risk of compromise. The station and headquarters weighed in on the expected value of the information to be gained from a successful operation. Based on what was known of the target, the techs described their plan to enter the facility and do the required deconstruction, which could involve removing baseboards, drilling, implanting devices, reconstructing damaged walls, inventorying tools, and exiting securely. The scenario also included the plan for communicating with counter-surveillance teams and contingency procedures, what to do in an emergency should technical or security problems arise during the operation. After the installation, audio devices were managed from the listening post. The survey included information about the location, equipment, and staffing of the listening post. The station had responsibility for staffing the post, manning the tape recorders, translating and producing transcripts, while OTS maintained and serviced the equipment. When an audio operation ended, the techs conducted another clandestine entry to remove the device and to restore the facility, leaving no trace of the installation. This objective was not always achievable. Operational judgment would balance the risk of exposure during a re-entry with the value and importance of the equipment to be retrieved. Both audio surveillance and concealed video camera operations consisted of 3 primary components: the collection device, the transmission link, and the listening or observation post. Collection devices were usually a microphone or camera that would covertly acquire the information for transmission down a wire or radio frequency broadcast to a listening post. The collector might be a subminiature microphone embedded in the woodwork, a tap placed across the telephone line, or a pinhole video camera concealed behind a dressing room mirror. Power for the collection device came from batteries or by siphoning power from the existing electrical lines at the target location. The transmission link sent the collected signal containing the sound or imagery from the collection device to a receiving and recording location. The configuration of the target, the cooperation of the local security service, and the distance to the listening post were all factors in determining the type of link used: hard wire, radio transmission, or a more exotic system such as laser or fiber optics. Where the monitoring post was positioned close to the target, as in the basement of an apartment building, or in the adjacent room of a hotel, a hard-wired microphone to the recorder would be preferable, since no over-the-air radio signal was generated. Hardwiring a microphone or video camera could also eliminate the need for a power source at the target site, and made the implanted device nearly impossible to detect without X-raying the floors, furniture, and walls. However, hardwiring is usually slow to install and potentially more susceptible to accidental discovery. For microphones hardwired to the listening post, OTS developed special tools to aid in their invisible installation. A small, easily concealed aluminum crowbar was developed for quickly prying baseboards away from the wall to hide wires, as was a special handheld fine wire kit that used a razor blade to slice a small slit in a wall, insert a pair of tiny wires, and finally seal the opening using a pencil eraser. The device could lay wires across a painted surface without leaving a trace. For audio installations involving damage to woodwork or walls, OTS engineers created special quick-drying putties and odorless paint to hide signs of construction. The tech could complete his installation and cover all traces of his work during a single entry into a target site. The listening or observation post received and recorded signals from the transmission link for processing. A typical post could contain several recorders, each paired to an implanted collection device. Advances in digital recording created a virtually unlimited recording capacity. The radio frequency transmitter became the CIA's most frequently used device for sending a stolen signal out of a target location. Although the transmitter required batteries or another power source, its signals had an advantage in that they could be monitored anywhere within a kilometer of the installation and farther with the use of repeaters. Since the early 1970s, CIA surveillance systems have included the capability for remotely turning the transmitter on and off at selected times to conserve battery power and storing collected conversations for a remotely programmed transmission at a later time. For the hardest targets, exotic systems were developed to collect audio via lasers, infrared light, or fiber optic cables. More technically complex and difficult to maintain than the radio frequency transmitters, these systems were limited in use but effective in situations where a target employed aggressive technical countermeasures to block, identify, or neutralize a radio frequency transmission link. Transmitting signals via infrared or laser reduced vulnerability to traditional TSCM sweep techniques. MI6 officer Richard Tomlinson described the difficulties experienced in an operation to bug the penthouse apartment of a suspected Russian intelligence officer in Lisbon. A loft space above the apartment provided a suitable place for hiding the small microphone, but a problem arose in linking the microphone to the recording equipment located in another apartment below. The use of a normal radio link was ruled out for technical reasons, so the alternative was to link the two areas by running a small wire through a convoluted drain pipe that wound its way down the building. Technical officers experimented with various mechanical crawlers in an effort to thread the wire through the bends of the drain pipe to no avail, before hitting on the idea of using a mouse. Tomlinson describes the operation. Using a fishing line, they could dangle the mouse, harnessed to the end of a fishing line, into the top end of the drain pipe. They would then lower it down the vertical section of the pipe to the first right-angled bend. From there, the mouse could scurry along the horizontal part of the pipe to the next vertical section, and so on, down to the bottom of the pipe where it could be recaptured. The wire could then be attached to the line and pulled through the pipe. Trials of the mouse wire delivery system on the Century House drain pipes, using three white mice borrowed from the Chemical and Biological Weapons Research Establishment at Porton Down, proved reasonably successful. One mouse, nicknamed Mickey, was a natural and scampered through the pipes enthusiastically. A second, Tricky, tried to climb back up the fishing wire when dangled, but once in the pipe, was reasonably competent. Methods of clandestinely introducing a listening or photo device were as varied as the imagination of the techs. Eavesdropping devices embedded inside Trojan horse-style gifts were given to diplomats, businessmen, and other high-profile targets with the expectation that the device would be placed in an area used for important conversations. The gift, described by case officer as one that keeps on giving, could be an engraved pen and pencil set for the target's desk, a decorative flower pot, or a handsome globe. Two primary weaknesses of a Trojan horse operation are the inability to predict or control where the gift, with the listening device, is placed, and the potential blowback on the giver should the deception be discovered. For short-duration audio operations, OTS developed small portable eavesdropping systems embedded in functional everyday items such as lighters and disposable ballpoint pens. Such a device could be attached by a member of the cleaning staff beneath a conference room table where it would not be noticed, or secreted by an official visitor between the cushions of a couch. The eavesdropping device would collect and transmit room audio as long as it retained battery power or until removed or discarded. Ideally, an operation to deploy a quick plant included an advance visit to the target site to determine the best place to leave the device, identify an appropriate concealment, and determine a listening post location. Concealments for quick plant operations can be either tailored or generic. Deployment of a generic device, say a disposable cigarette lighter or expended ballpoint pen, requires little advance planning. OTS carried an inventory of bugged AC electrical adapters that could be quickly installed between a lamp plug and the socket. These were available in the varied colors and styles appropriate for target countries. DCI William Casey credits himself with personally deploying a generic quick plant, disguised as a large needle, in the office sofa of a senior Middle Eastern official during a trip abroad. The woodblock represented a frequently deployed variation of a quick plant. Woodblocks encased audio transmitters and were designed to be placed underneath a table or desk, or as part of a chair, or a replacement for sections of chair rails and crown molding. High-quality woodblocks replicated the color and type of the wood, as well as shape of the molding, and appeared as a normal part of the furniture or room design. Structural woodblocks replaced the pieces of triangular-shaped wood that provided stability and support beneath most pieces of wooden furniture. These were unlikely to be seen and required less engineering effort to conceal beyond matching the general color of the furniture. Books were a variation of woodblocks, the spine of a book providing a tailored concealment cavity for a listening device. A visitor to the target location could execute a quick plant by unobtrusively replacing a specific book with a seemingly identical edition. When access inside the target location or to adjacent rooms proved impossible, more exotic systems enabled collection of audio from a distance. Laser microphones worked on the principle that a laser beam directed at an angle toward a glass window was reflected and could be captured at a listening post, compared with the original signal, and demodulated to recover audio. In the 1980s, OTS engineers developed a program that embedded a small prism inside window glass in key targets. The prism increased the sensitivity of the laser microphone and allowed OTS to control accurately the angle of reflection. With this prism system, the laser could be aimed at the window, and the reflection would return along a parallel path to the LP. This eliminated the necessity for the transmitter and receiver to be in different locations and made detection more difficult. A passive resonator concealed inside a wall or piece of furniture can be targeted with a radar-like signal transmitted from an exterior post. The reflected signal is demodulated to eavesdrop on all conversations in the room. Because its power source comes from the external signal, the device can transmit indefinitely. CIA technicians saw their first resonator in 1952 when one was discovered embedded in the carved wooden Great Seal of the United States. Inside the halls of the CIA's original headquarters building, a historical display from the Directorate of Science and Technology shows the inventiveness of CIA scientists. One device, a robotic catfish named Charlie, was designed to be indistinguishable when viewed from the water's surface to channel catfish commonly found in rivers around the world. It appeared so lifelike while swimming in the water that some feared that it might be consumed by even larger predators. Charlie's mission was unspecified, but experts speculated he could be used to swim into freshwater rivers and canals to gather water samples near foreign nuclear power facilities. The mobile Aqua robot could also serve as an underwater platform for eavesdropping devices. CIA officers abroad lived, worked, and operated under the constant awareness that at any time they could come under surveillance. Officer training included weeks of surveillance detection runs to develop and practice skills in recognizing and dealing with surveillance, either obvious or discreet. Obvious surveillance was used when a foreign security service chose to send a message to an officer that his activities were being closely watched. Such surveillance could become aggressive, verging on harassment and intimidation. Tactics might include bumper locking, in which a trailing surveillance vehicle stayed so close that its bumper actually touched the target car. On the street, surveillance watchers would walk directly in front of, behind, or adjacent to the target, staying in close proximity, even in shops and buses. Slashed tires, broken windshields, and stolen car batteries conveyed the same message. We know who you are, and whatever you are up to, we don't like it. Aggressive actions are sometimes taken by surveillance teams to retaliate for a provocation or to thwart an operational act. This happened to an active young CIA officer whose operational activities aroused suspicions of the local service. The officer received an unscheduled late-night visit at his home by the country's chief of counterintelligence. After a tense discussion, the foreign chief left behind a parting compliment coupled with an unstated warning. Mr. Paceman, you are very good. However, I suggest the remainder of your tour should be rather boring. Discreet surveillance, while not physically intimidating, was difficult to recognize and more to be feared. Failure to detect counterintelligence watchers could lead to operational compromise and loss of an agent. Early in the 1970s, OTS engineers created tiny body-worn receivers to intercept the radio transmissions of Soviet surveillance teams. These concealed receivers, unrecognized by the KGB for several years, gave CIA officers operating in Moscow a prized capability for detecting surveillance activity. Well-trained surveillance teams, operating in familiar areas where they control the turf, will attempt to lull the officer into the false belief that he is black, free of surveillance. Should the officer fail to detect such surveillance and proceed to go operational, he could unwittingly lead surveillance to his agent or be caught during an operational act. Discreet Soviet surveillance played a key role in the compromise of major operations and the expulsion of CIA officers from the USSR. Disguises offered one method of defeating the KGB's overwhelming surveillance advantages. OTS sculpted and fitted disguises for use by case officers and agents to evade surveillance and avoid recognition. Before leaving for foreign assignments, case officers were trained to apply a variety of false appearances and function normally while in disguise. Each received a light disguise kit tailored to the officer's gender. The kit typically included items like false mustaches and beards, hair pieces, a fake wart, planar lens eyeglasses, hair coloring, collapsible canes, reversible coats, shoe lifts, and dental appliances. Some officers, whose assignment required a more elaborate disguise, received full or partial head and face disguises, individually sculpted and tinted to blend fully with the wearer's skin and hair color. Because surveillance teams relied heavily on visual indicators to track a target, quick changes in an officer's appearance, adding or removing a hat, letting hair down, putting on or taking off glasses, or reversing the color of a jacket, might cause surveillance to lose their target in crowds or on busy streets. In the cat-and-mouse game between surveillance and counter-surveillance, the edge traditionally went to the side controlling home territory. For the CIA,